If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hi, Kimchi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm so excited to be chatting today because, I think as a journalist, you know, I don't know if we're ever supposed to really admit this, but I'm a fan of your work and I love what you do and what you represent and also the visibility you've given to Korean culture and also just the Asian community and Asian diaspora as well. So it's, and as a Korean person myself, it's just something that I think has been something that, you know, I've craved, growing up and wanting to see in media. So I'm just so excited for our chat today. How's everything going?
Everything personally is going great. The worldwide, not so great at this moment.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world. How do you cope with that, actually, just being someone that is in the public eye and in the public discourse and also in a community that is quite literally at the center of a lot of the things that are going on in the world? Mm-hmm. How do you zoom in and zoom out with everything that's going on?
Obviously, if there's like dire information that people need to know right away, I'll use my platform, share, and talk about it. But then also, if I keep like fitting into the news, like it also makes me spiral like in a bad, yeah, to a bad place mentally. So then just recently, my thing is I just like don't go on social media. Like I don't scroll.
No doom scrolling.
Because I, you know, every day is just like some breaking news about like how, like, you know, human beings are losing their rights and, you know, people dying, getting killed, and
it's heavy.
Billionaires getting richer, you know, it's just, So I just have to like, I have to tune it out. I for like, at least for the next like 3 years.
Yeah. And hopefully.
I don't know.
Anyways, who knows?
I didn't mean to spiral already on the podcast, but aside from that, personally, everything's going great.
Love that. Love that to hear for you. I wanted to start off, you know, when people hear your name, like Kimchi, as like the drag queen, they might think, yeah, a drag persona, a beauty entrepreneur, a cookbook author, you know, cultural figure. But when you hear your own name, who do you think of first in terms of who shows up first?
I guess entrepreneur would be like the most correct way to put it. But I'm always someone who loves new challenges and I love like learning new skills. I love like doing things I've never done before. So if there's something that I haven't done and I'm offered a chance to do it, I'll always say yes to it because I'd rather die trying something. Knowing that I tried, then like never have done anything. So
yeah,
and I guess it would fall under a category of like entrepreneur.
Yeah, have you always had that kind of innate sense of curiosity, like even growing up, or is this something that you've kind of grown into and learned to be curious as well?
Maybe because I'm someone who gets bored very easily. I just constantly need new stimulation. So you know, I'm always like looking for like new ways to like, you know, keep my brain wired. Maybe sure. I'm like undiagnosed ADHD or something.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, drag was once seen as, you know, a subculture a long time ago, and now it's become such a part of mainstream culture in so many ways, popular culture, and you've built such an incredible, you know, business foundation off of that. When did you first realize that drag could be more than performance, more than, a persona and really the foundation of like an entrepreneurial life?
I guess it was like unintentional, but obviously like I love watching Drag Race growing up. And one of my like biggest thing was like, there's so many like queens that like I love supporting, but like a lot of them just weren't putting out merch, or they would put out merch that was not what I would personally consider cute. And I'm like, I want to give them money, but you know, just, you know, sure. like give me a product that I want to spend money on. So after I got on Drag Race, and I'm like, well, at least I want to make sure like all my merch is cute and they're all stuff like that I want people to like wear proudly, instead of like having be like this like really hokey like merchandise.
Yeah.
So I like designed all my shirt in a way where even if you didn't know who I was, it's still like a cool like graphic thing that people could like wear around, and it's like and it doesn't feel like drag merch. And that's how I got started. And like almost like every other episode, I would like create exclusive t-shirts that had to do with my time on the show, and I would like make them in a limited run, and each design would completely sell out. And then for DragCon, I made enamel pins where I'm like, well, let me make enamel pins, but do it a little differently. And I designed it so it looked like a paper doll, but you could like change out the wig and the outfit to the enamel pin. And it was received really well. And those also sold out right away. And I was like, oh, so there is like a potential to be had for designing like a good product, you know, that is not just a drag merchandise, but obviously, like, people that appreciate me and one's, like, a part of my aesthetic will purchase it. But also, even people didn't know who I was, like, people will purchase it and they're enjoying it.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because, like, I feel like drag queens innately are entrepreneurs in so many ways, because there, you know, there is this element of having to like hustle and make things work and like solve challenges and figure it out, right? Just as drag performers. But I feel like you have been such a pioneer in terms of innovating in as an entrepreneur in that space. And as you mentioned, not just making it drag merch, but just merch in general that really leverage pop culture moments and leverage communities that of course were in the drag community, but now are beyond the drag community, and like what could be and what the possibilities could be beyond, you know, what might have been a very, very smallish part of the market, and now is much a larger net that you're casting. Where did you learn the skill sets and also just the strategies in terms of understanding how to create products and find the right people to make the products and move at such a pace at the beginning when you didn't have all these things necessarily, these relationships established?
Yeah, a lot of it is like you learn as you go. I don't have like a background in business or performing, or my background is a graphic designer. So basically like only thing I came with is like an eye for a design and like quote unquote artistic talent. It feels very pretentious to even like call yourself like artistic. But
definitely. Like it's definitely true though, for sure. And so,
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So this is before Kimchick Beauty, when I was like making merchandise, my like main MO was like, let me hire like the most talented people that also not everyone is working with. So like, let me discover talent, and especially queer Asian American talent. So all the, like a lot of the illustrations and all that were all done by like queer Asian artists. That I like found their work through like social media, like Instagram and Tumblr and things like that. And obviously like I compensated them, like, you know,
yeah.
And also like letting like their work know. So, and I feel like when you like highlight, you know, talent like that, you know, they're also like appreciative of like for the opportunity, but also like it's a mutually benefiting relationship because they provide you this amazing work.
Over the years, how would you say that your own personal definition of success has changed from when you started your career and you started your businesses to, you know, today being a bit more established and having an audience and understanding what you know now? How has the idea of success changed for you?
The idea of success. I guess everyone has like a different idea for success. For me, success doesn't mean necessarily like a financial success personally, like my goal with Kimchi Beauty is, so you know, like how certain products, like, you know, like Coty Earth Bump Powder, for example, mm-hmm. everybody knows like what the packaging looks like. And so many people know what the packaging looks like because they sell it in like their grandmother or their mother's like nightstand. And a lot of people just like know that product by heart. And I want that to be Kimchi Chic Beauty products where, you know, if I'm like no longer on Earth, but like the legacy of like my brand like carries on as like a mm-hmm. staple in people's household. And even if people didn't know who I was or what I did, but they like genuinely loved the products and became part of like their daily routine, like I think that would be like a great success for me. And it's really cool seeing on social media, like a lot of people say like, oh, like the setting powder is my like the best setting powder I've ever used, blah, blah, blah. And then the comments will be like, oh, the owner is a drag queen. And like a little, these people have no idea. And I think that's right. Cool. And, you know, it feels like I'm succeeding.
And they're coming to your brand because it's a great product, not because mm-hmm. they know you necessarily as a drag queen and as a persona first.
Exactly.
What would you say, you know, have been like the biggest hurdles to building Kimchi Chic Beauty, like both from within the beauty industry and from outside, the outside perception of drag as, you know, quote unquote niche? What have been some of the challenges and also some of the opportunities that you have been able to realize through your company?
I think probably like the hardest part for us was launching the brand and then COVID happening, which, you know, like, and then, you know, like with like shipping and, you know, like getting like products, you know, like, and then having it be like docked in the sea for like months at a time because like no one can access it. And then, you know, there's like a whole thing with the tariffs and I feel like it's always something. So we just navigate it day by day. It's a very interesting time to be a small business owner right now. That's for sure.
How do you stay nimble and, you know, have the ability to kind of pivot as these kind of things come up?
You know, you literally just have to take it day by day. You never know what kind of like irrational things are gonna come from like the government. You know, what kind of breaking news is gonna happen that's gonna like change the tide of everything? Oh, which great relationship we had with like another neighboring country will we destroy today? You know.
I know, it's a strange time we live in right now. I was interviewing another founder, a beauty founder, a few months ago. She's a Canadian beauty founder behind this indigenous brand called Cheekbone Beauty. And she was talking about how they had put so much of their time and resources into putting out this lipstick. And it was right before the pandemic. When everyone would start wearing masks and like the amount of stress that mm-hmm. came from that moment because you put everything all into this product and so much of your financial resources and everything. And then all of a sudden you're hit with this big moment where people can't even one wear your product like because they're wearing masks and everything. So I guess my question for you is without knowing what the world is going to throw at you, how have you built in a sense of one, resiliency within yourself, but two, I guess the reinforcements within your company to make sure that regardless of what's thrown at you as a business, you're able to move quickly and be able to kind of adjust as needed?
Obviously, like everybody in our team are like fabulous people. They're like such hard workers and, you know, like they love the brand and they believe in the brand just as much as, you know, like I do. So I don't know. All I can say is just, like, we just take things day by day. You know, that's all you can do right now. You know, you can't plan anything too far ahead.
Yeah, sometimes that's the best policy.
Yeah, and then sometimes, you know, we can't control things. So, like, what are the upcoming releases and what are the products that we want to develop? And hope for the best.
I feel like so much of being, you know, a drag queen is rooted in understanding, like, a sense of your own brand and who you are as a persona. What do you think are the key ingredients to building a superstar personal brand and how that has extended into your other professional endeavors?
So obviously you want like a persona that sets you apart from everybody else, but then also that voice has to be authentically you. I mean, it's one thing to just like do something that no one else is doing, but if it doesn't feel genuine, you know, like either people see it or you know, you're going to be trapped in this persona that you don't enjoy doing.
Right.
And I guess the persona of Kimchi is like live action anime character, you know, Who loves high fashion.
Yeah.
And that is also genuinely who I am as a person too. So I'm a nerd who loves glamour.
Right. As a sidebar, we just interviewed Maggie Kang, who is the founder of or the creator of K-pop Demon Hunters. Mm-hmm. Is like, what are you drawing, or how, I guess, like, how are you feeling about seeing the world embrace Korean culture and anime and this kind of like hypersaturated world across music and film and pop culture in general in the way that we're seeing it today?
Oh my God, amazing. So when I first started performing, I would only perform K-pop songs because at the time K-pop was like unknown in Korea. So by me picking a name, Kimchi, and only performing K-pop songs, I was like forcing my Korean culture into like the Chicago gay nightlife. And after I performed, a lot of people were like, oh, that song was like so amazing. That was catchy. What was that song? And people like look it up. Nowadays, you know, like K-pop is like everywhere and you can't escape it.
Yeah.
But I love it, you know. Let them know. I'm not saying I'm a pioneer or anything, but, you know, I was trying to make it happen back then, and now it's so much easier.
Now
you don't have to like really sell the fantasy because people like hear it and they're like, oh, I know this song.
And that's been through the work of years and years of Korean culture being exported and mm-hmm. you know, supported by artists like yourself as well. Was there like a specific artist that you gravitated towards in any of the songs that you would perform to?
So at that time, my favorite K-pop group, their name was Tiara.
Okay.
And I performed like a lot of the songs by them. I'm showing my age. Yeah. Second generation.
When I first discovered K-pop, like way back in the day too, mm-hmm. my first introduction into the scene was BoA and 21 and then mm-hmm. MP. That was like my era of like K-pop, and now like, but it's so interesting because like seeing some of those K-pop stars that I grew up with and trying to enter, I remember when they tried to enter the quote unquote Western market mm-hmm. with music and stuff, and they didn't quite get into it in the way that they did, but they paved and opened the doors for so many other people that we're seeing today, like the Blackpinks and everything, because they made that effort, right? It's so interesting to see the evolution of that.
Sure, 21 walks so Blackpink can go to Paris Fashion Week, you know?
Exactly. So I just went on a big sidebar there, but you know, when we talk about, I guess, cultural leadership, you know, drag itself in and of itself is a form of visibility and leadership by community. Do you see your drag persona and your business persona as different from each other, or are they quite ingrained with each other, and do they feed off of each other? Obviously, you have your brand name and your stage name and everything, but do you ever feel like you want to separate the two, or do you feel like that is a natural symbiosis?
I feel like that is natural symbiosis. You know, I feel like just like when people like get ready to go out and then they put on like a full face of makeup and an outfit, you know, like that's their drag, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my drag is like, if I go out today, will I put on a fabulous wig or will I wax my hair down?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's different for everybody, but just like personally for me, you know, like I feel like the same person like in and out. I'm just presenting in like whatever like form that I want to present.
Have there ever been any moments for you along your career where you felt like you didn't have or couldn't get a seat at the table, so you had to just ultimately just build your own table for yourself and see, you know, who would come to and sit with you in that sense?
I've never worried too much about like what I don't have, because I feel like there's always someone who's going to be richer than me, prettier than me, skinnier than me, more famous than me. Mm. And I don't care about all of those things. I don't know if I've ever cared about like getting a seat at the table. Like what table, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm fine like staying in my own lane, doing my own thing.
Yeah.
Not worried about
And so much of your work has really, you know, focused on joy and self-expression and like even like liberation in lots of ways. How do you think about beauty as a cultural tool for dialogue and discussion about where we are as a society today and how we can use beauty as a vehicle for what we want to, what we value, and also like what we don't value?
Obviously, like I'm like a firm believer in everyone should do whatever they want to do as long as they're not harming anybody else. And even when it comes to beauty too, you know, like a lot of the people, like I get feedback from, like I get like, oh, that color is like a little too bold. I don't know if it's like right for me. Oh, like that is like a little too sheer. I think don't worry about what other people are going to think. Just put on the colors and like the shades that make you happy, whether that's complete neutral or like a bright, like rainbow puke. Do what makes you happy.
Yeah, ultimately. So we are talking about, you know, the beauty industry and historically how, you know, sometimes it hasn't always been the most inclusive space, you know, either by, you know, whether by race or gender or body type or whatever it might be. What role would you like your brand to play in dismantling those barriers and creating more access and inclusivity?
I think it starts with the consumers supporting brands that are minority owned, LGBTQ owned, any brands like that, you know, come from like folks of like marginalized communities. So that's why like our brand, like being inclusive is very important to us. And that's why we collab and we also like work with models, you know, who come from like various like aspects of life.
Mm-hmm. I love that. What's like been like a favorite campaign of yours that kind of reflects that viewpoint?
Oh, I think like my collaboration with Naomi Smalls, obviously, definitely is... She's my best friend, and she also is like a strong, like artistic guy. So, like collaborating with her was like a dream. And then our collaboration with Plastic Tierra was also major.
Both incredibly beautiful as well. That also helps, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah.
From your perspective, what's exciting you about the industry and the community right now and the culture? I guess like what's the most exciting thing that's like, oh yeah, I'm really, really excited to be immersed and living and working within this industry?
You know, like through the rise of things like TikTok Shop and I'm just like an average consumer with a TikTok account feeling like they have a voice and they could like make reviews and things like, now you don't have to just be like a huge YouTuber with millions of followers to like generate views and like hits, but anyone with like a TikTok account can easily go viral, like with their reviews and things like that. So it's really cool to see the like tried and true reviews from like an average consumer feeling like they have a voice, and like a lot of the reviews feel genuine, which is also like very exciting to witness currently.
Yeah, like democratizing kind of the access in the industry and the ability to kind of create a business on your own and launch.
Exactly. Yep.
Is there anything like down the road that's like maybe 5 or 10 years from now that you think is going to really be a big part of the conversation in terms of the future of beauty and how you want to play a role in that conversation?
You know, they call it like the rise of conservatism and then also like the rise of like, you know, like a recession indicator. You know, these are like the words that are like thrown out loud, you know, in a lot of the beauty spaces. I think like a lot of the trends like reflect that too. You know, people are just going more and more minimal, like less color. But then also people are like afraid to like shell out money for like big purchases now because everything is so expensive. When it comes to like beauty brands, you know, with like an affordable price point, people shell it out on because, you know, people are getting like the dopamine hits from like products that are affordable. I think that's the only reason why you see like a lot of like indie brands that you're just like coming up in. Like succeeding. People aren't paying like $80 for like a single shadow anymore. You know, those days are long gone.
Right.
I feel like where we're going to be 10 years from now, I don't know. Will America still be standing?
It's hard to really think a decade in decade spans because one, everything moves so quickly these days that it's like you're thinking in like months and like years versus like a decade. And also just things change so quickly. And even the pace at which like something like AI has completely and continues to change the industry too. Like who knows where we're going to be at the pace that things are changing now. You know, it feels like every week there's something different.
It's crazy. And like the conversation around like AI too, like when you're online, everybody's like anti-AI, anti-AI, anti-AI. But then in my real life, all the people around me, like I see people sending out like invitations to Partyful with like Partyful like graphics like made with AI.
Right.
I see you know, like average person just like resharing like AI created content. Do people really hate AI or do people
hate the concept of AI. Yeah.
But then they'll still fully use it. And like everybody I know uses like ChatGPT and they brag about it. Like, I do all my grocery shopping like with ChatGPT. I like throw in like $80 and then like ask them to make me a grocery list. And I'm like, grocery store is like, I don't know, grocery shopping is like the easiest thing you can do. Why do you need ChatGPT to make you a grocery list?
Sure, I know. And also, I have to say that like sometimes when I'm scrolling through my Instagram feed, it has gotten so good, some of the AI, that I'm like, I have to really double and sometimes triple check to see if like a video, I'm like, is this AI? And then I have to go to the comments because I'm like, okay, I need someone to actually verify and like validate whether or not what I'm seeing is like actually AI or if it's like a genuine, like it's made everyone, I guess, a bit more skeptical too, which is not a bad thing. I think it is actually good to have a little bit of skepticism these days, but it's just so hard to pick up because it's gotten so good so fast. Like you could usually, I feel like this time last year, you could tell really easily if something was AI. And now I'm like, oh, it's like, it's pretty sophisticated what I'm seeing out there on just the usual ways.
And it happened
ways.
Very quickly too. So you don't like in a couple of years, so like fast. And I've so like, I actually have so many friends that were like laid off and their position was replaced by AI.
Oof. So, yeah. That's tough.
You know, 10 years ago, everyone going to tech thinking like, you know, you get these like majors in like programming, things like that, and you'll be set for life. But no, like all those positions are being replaced with AI, which is crazy.
You know, speaking of what's happening in culture and, you know, your line of work, drag culture originally started as a protest and continues to be in many different ways. But how do you think that that protest or what we're protesting has evolved or hasn't evolved? Like, what do you think is the... What do you think drag and drag culture is protesting today or serves as a protest for today?
I think drag is protesting individuality, also mostly queer art, voices from like the marginalized communities. I can't speak on everyone, but like a lot of us, we start doing drag because we want to feel good about ourselves. So we create these like looks and personas to become someone we are. We don't usually like present as like in our day-to-day life. And, you know, especially like a lot of the queerists that come from like oppressive places, you know, especially like a lot of those like small towns from a like, conservative town, they happen to have like the best drag in the world because, you know, that's their voice and that's how like they creatively express themselves, you know, in these like oppressive places.
Right. Right. It's like growing from like a seed growing from like concrete or something. I don't know. That's a good metaphor. But you know,
like, for example,
I understand
like Texas and like Salt Lake City has some of the best drag that I've ever seen. And those places will be considered like some of the most conservative places too. So
over the course of your career, has your perception of what drag is and who it's for, has that changed or evolved over the course of your career? Like when you started out to where you are now?
Yes and no, because I feel like when I started doing drag, drag was already starting to become really popular. But I guess nowadays, you know, like everyone has an opinion on drag, you know, like everybody can turn on the TV and like put on MTV or like Paramount or whatever streaming that they watch it nowadays. And
yeah,
you know, and he's like, meow, like, that's not drag. Like, you know, but it's like there's no rules to drag, you know, like people do what makes them feel good. And, you know, take it or leave it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, you operate and exist in like the world of drag, but also in the world of media, in food and beauty, and essentially just bringing people together around joy and this shared experience. What is something like the notion of breaking bread mean to you in a broader sense and like bringing people together?
That is a hard question.
I guess like maybe if I rephrase it, what brings you joy about being able to bring different communities and your different identities together through what you do? Because, you know, you're not just doing drag, you're not just doing, you know, you're not just building up social media profile, you're not just putting out a voice in food media, you're and being a beauty entrepreneur, you're all of these things. So I guess like what brings you joy about bringing all these worlds together and by extension, the communities together?
It's really hard to summarize because like being able to do something different every day and then meet different people from all aspects of life is what makes me happy. I mean, obviously like I'm an extrovert and I love like meeting various people, and whenever I get to like meet people who can teach me something that I have never been able to do before, that's like what motivates me to keep going. And I want to like meet as many people as possible with different skill set that could also like share it with me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, and I think it can be just that too, is just being able to just have more people in your life that are sharing and giving, and in return, mm-hmm. you're doing the same thing with them, right?
Yeah.
You know, you grew up Korean in America. What messages did you receive about beauty in terms of coming from Korean culture, which has, you know, very specific kind of beauty ideals, but then also being a Korean, you know, person of color in America? How did those two things, I guess, come in contrast with each other, and how did they kind of inform your philosophy around beauty?
It's interesting is in Korea, you're naturally beautiful until you're skinny. And whenever you run into someone you know, the first thing they're going to tell you most of the time is going to be like, oh my God, you've lost so much weight. Oh my God, you've gained mm-hmm. so much weight.
Yeah, and 살쪘어.
Oh, 살 많이 빠졌네. You know, and just the first, you know, that is all everybody like is obsessed with. And when you've lost a lot of weight, people are like, oh my God, you're really taking care of yourself. And but these are the things like we don't ever voice to people to their face in the Western culture. Mm-hmm. Generally, like people don't comment on other people's like appearance, or at least just the culture, like to their face at least. When you're online, it's everyone's like, oh my God, has she, like, is it just me, or does she look like she's been like raiding the fridge every day? I don't know.
Right. And, right. And,
you know, people will hide IMD anonymity and comment on people's body. So that contrast is like very interesting to me. Especially as someone like whose weight is like always fluctuating. I guess on a brighter side, you know, Korean people at least tell you to your face on what they think about your weight, while as Western culture, you know, like won't tell it to your face, but then you'll see it online later.
Right. Yeah. It's like, which one is better, actually?
Yeah.
So I guess like how has I guess the culture of beauty in these two different worlds that you kind of exist in and have existed and grew up in influence the work that you do through Kimchi Chic Beauty?
And not talking about when we're talking about just strictly just like makeup beauty standards too. Mm-hmm. That is also very interesting because in Asia, everybody wants to be pale. And especially with the makeup trend in Korea right now, it is looking literally white as possible. If you watch like any videos of like Korean celebrities and things like that, everybody is like, not even just like peachy white. Everyone is like white.
Yes.
Like white. And when you actually go to Asia and walk around, people in the streets, they walk around with like that white skin that is, I'm like, that is not humanly possible to like achieve naturally for Koreans. I'm like, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. And yet somehow they look like that, you know, they get their skins bleached. They like wear foundations that are like three shades, like way like lighter.
I one time met someone here in Toronto who had moved from Korea. And it was like a summer day that I met her, and As I was talking to her, I realized that she was wearing skin-colored like tights on her arms because I could see like the seam around her wrist. And I was like, oh, that is like not even her skin that I'm seeing. It is, but she was wearing it as if it was her skin, like in the sense that like she was wearing like a short sleeve dress and everything. Mm-hmm. But like, I was so surprised to see that because I was like, oh my God, it's like, it's not even just the face. It's like the whole body. And I'm like, you must be really warm, first of all, too. But like, it is to the lengths that some people will go to is astonishing. And I feel like
Korean culture, a lot of them also definitely like wear like this cream that also reflects light.
Okay.
So like when you see them like in stage with like stage lights and things like that, that's why also they look extra whiter because they're like reflecting like the light to even look whiter.
Wow, I didn't even know about that one.
Well, like so in the Western culture. Oh, sorry.
No, well, Western culture, it's like the opposite, right, where we
everybody wants to be tan. Yeah.
Exactly. It's very interesting. Like kind of the historical context around a lot of that stuff too. But I guess through your work, I mean, it seems like obviously just embracing so many different, like diversity in general, and so many different types of skin types and body types and everything to kind of really reinforce this idea and culture of inclusivity, whether you're coming from a Korean culture or a Western culture too, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you see, I mean, like having been, you know, having lived in both Korea and America growing up, what was your experience like with seeing yourself represented? Because obviously when you're in Korea, you see yourself represented from like a cultural standpoint. But then if you're in America, you see less of that in media. So what was your experience like kind of going between those two worlds?
Yeah, so obviously when I look at Korean television, it's easy to see people like that look like me. But in the American media, the only like Asian celebrities that I really knew were Lucy Liu, Sandra Oh, and Margaret Cho, and who are all very fabulous and, you know, like absolutely great. But
yes,
like I never really saw myself in any of those, you know, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. In popular culture, Western culture.
Yeah. And I always felt like, and even at least this was like in the Chicago gay scene, like when I was like up and coming, people just weren't into like Asian guys, you know, like a lot of people either want to only date white or black. And the people that were into Asian guys strictly only were into Asian guys, you know, like they call them rice queens.
Yeah. And then it feels weird.
And it feels like, you know,
I'm too far in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know, like, it's like, do I have a place in the world, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of that has changed now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's...
Or so I thought.
Yeah, it's really...
There's like a lot more...
Interesting because, you know, speaking from my own experience, growing up in Canada and not seeing myself represented in popular culture, the only people that were like guys that I saw represented were like, I think literally Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, and Jet Li in terms of the media that I know that like my family consumed and stuff. And I'm like, well, if you're like an Asian person growing up in a Western culture and you don't have any aspirations to be a martial arts like actor, then what do you have as a reference point? And then that's not even even scratching the surface around like seeing an Asian person represented that is also queer. Like that is a whole next level, right? But it is, I was just curious to see what your experience is like having lived in both worlds where you do see a lot of representation and then you don't see a lot of representation and kind of oscillating between those two worlds.
You know, now I feel like I could be the representation for someone because a lot of people do, like when I like meet them at gigs and like meet and greet, they tell me like, oh, like I relate so much to you and things like that. Oh my, you're such an inspiration to me, which like, thank you. But you know, just go out there, get yourself out there, be the representation that you need.
Do you like having that kind of you know, responsibility or having that mantle of like being that person for other people in the community?
You know, I've never tried to be that person for that community, but if it's happening, I think that's so cool.
You know, so you've built a pioneering beauty brand, authored a cookbook, toured the world, done so many things, so many incredible things. What's the next frontier for kimchi and the kimchi empire?
From kimchi empire, obviously keeping the world fabulous, one makeup at a time. you know, we want to continue working with amazing creators from like around the world, especially those from marginalized communities. And, you know, like right now in my life, I don't really have big goals. I just want like everyone in the world to live peacefully and happily, you know, and that's all I want, you know?
Yeah, I know. That's the most that we can hope for these days, it seems like. How do you decide which opportunities to pursue which to pass on? Because I'm sure there's lots of things that are put in front of you, and you've been able to pursue so many things, but how do you know what to take on and what to be like, you know what, this one's not for me, I'm going to pass, or maybe this is not the right time?
In the past, I've accepted like a lot of things just to like try it out and have fun, but then, you know, like come to find out like they're like problematic or like, you know, things like that. Like, for example, my union student was like, oh, do you want to do this campaign for like Trans Visibility Day? And I'm like, oh, that sounds amazing. Yeah, like, let's do it. And then it turns out the place that was doing like a trans like awareness campaign didn't actually hire any trans creators. And then it was actually like also
for an awareness campaign around the trans community.
Yes. And then on top of that, it was like a fetish website that like fetishized like trans folks. At the time, like with my agency, I just assumed like they would have vetted it and it was going to be something like this amazing campaign. But I'm like, oh my God. So now I got to like look really into everything.
Due diligence.
Yeah, due diligence.
For sure. For sure. Do you ever think about legacy? Like, is that something that enters your mind at this stage in your career? And like kind of like what you would like to leave behind when you're like retire, when, you know, or when you want to just settle down and not be constantly in like building mode, not just as like a drag artist, but also just as like a business leader. Does that enter your mind?
Just me as personally, it's my legacy. I don't, you know, it doesn't really matter like what I do, but from like the brands I've built and like the hard work of like everyone that went into like achieving the things like I've worked with, you know, I would like that to like leave behind. You know, I think I mentioned before where like I wouldn't mind like my products becoming, you know, like staples in people's lives and it carries on for generations. Mm-hmm. And I think that alone, like, I think I'm happy and cool with.
You know, when future generations do look back at you, what do you hope that they say you built, not just for drag or for beauty, but for just the culture?
Hopefully they'll say things like, oh, that person was just like a silly little artist who was on the right side of history, who fought for what was right.
Yes, yes. These are the questions that I feel like a lot of us are asking ourselves these days. And just, are we going to be proud and happy with the decisions we're making today down the road? You know?
Yes.
Yeah. I want to thank you so much for your wonderful patience and your time and your energy. I really love chatting with you. If you have a few more minutes, I'd love to do a quick rapid fire if you're down for that.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's do it.
Okay. Kimchi, fresh or sour?
Sour.
Okay. And do you have a favorite type, like oi or the radish? Ooh. Or like what's your vibe?
Ooh, I like oisobagi, but my favorite is pagimchi.
Ooh, okay. Yes, yes, yes.
Especially not cut up the whole, so you can like wrap it around and then eat it like crunch, 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 crunch.
Yes, exactly. What's your favorite comfort food from home?
Ooh, my favorite comfort from home. It's going to sound very simple, but just fresh cooked bowl of rice with butter, soy sauce, and egg mixed in.
Yes, that is a classic. I feel like that's something that a lot of us grew up on.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a struggle meal. Maybe it was just like a quick breakfast, like, you know, on the way to school or something. But, you know, nothing to be said. Yeah.
Okay, sweet, savory, or spicy? What's your, like, default, like, flavor mood?
Oh, always savory. Savory, savory, savory. You know, I like sweets, but I never crave sweets. So.
Right, okay.
If you're doing, like, a fuck, marry, kill, I would say fuck savory, marry savory, kill sweets.
Okay. What's one ingredient that you always have in your kitchen?
Oh, There's so many ingredients, hard to pinpoint one.
Is it like a staple that you just like, you either like stock up on or you just make sure that you never run low on?
I guess fresh garlic. You know, as a Korean person, I always have to have like garlic and then also
absolutely
green onion, you know, just like a little scallion on top of everything makes everything fresher and makes it prettier.
I agree. It elevates just the most basic things. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite restaurant in your city right now currently?
Oh, there's so many, but my favorite is called Borikoge.
Okay.
They do, what's the Korean word for it? A boribekban. But okay. Every dish is, it comes with million side dishes.
Yes,
but every side dish is made like so fresh and so good. It sounds simple from the way I describe it, but every time I've brought people there, everyone's been like blown away.
I always feel like the measure and the measure of like a great Korean restaurant mm-hmm. is one, just to see who's in the restaurant, but then two, the banchan, like the quality of the banchan. That to me, I'm like, oh, if you've got good banchan, that means like the rest is
you know what you're great. Doing, yeah.
Exactly. What's the best meal you've had on tour or maybe the most memorable?
Oh, there's so many, but I think one of my favorite meals that I've ever had is from Taiwan when I first discovered their night market.
Okay.
You know, like Taipei has over like 30 different night markets and each of them are almost like a mile long, if not longer. And you just like walk down and you literally buy everything that you want to buy and eat. And it's going to be some of the best food you'll ever have, but also the cheapest. You can go there with like $20 in your pocket and you won't be able to spend it all.
Yeah. Is there like one specific thing that you remember getting there at the night markets that you that really like stuck with you?
There is this thing called black pepper bun. And they like make it into a special oven, which almost looks like a tandoori oven. And it's this pastry that is jam-packed with these super peppery beef and mountain of green onion. And when you bite into it, the whole thing is filled with juice, almost like a soup dumpling. And the outside is like crispy, almost like a pie calzone shell. And the meat is like so peppery and spicy with the sweet green onion. And it's just bursting with juice. Oh my God, it's so good.
I need to go for lunch after this.
I think it's called like Hu Jiao Bing or something like that. I'm sure I butchered the pronunciation, but...
Yeah. You know, your name is Kimchi, your drag persona, but is there a dish that represents you personally other than like kimchi?
Is there a dish that represents me? Maybe spam fried rice. You get a little bit of everything, a little salty.
I love it. Okay, switching gears. What's one makeup product that you can't live without?
Oh, probably eyeliner. Mm-hmm. I feel like so much of my makeup is like eyeliner driven and an eyeliner can like make or break my look. So
do you have a beauty hack that you secretly swear by?
Not to sound like I'm like, you know, simp for my products, but the Puff Puff Puffs setting powder followed by the Stage Proof setting spray will really lock your makeup in all night long. And I'm not just saying it because I made it. It's genuinely like amazing product.
Yeah. What's the best feedback you've gotten from like your other friends in the drag community when they've tried your product?
They all use my product. All drag queens all use my product. And if they don't, they haven't discovered it yet.
No, literally.
Even when I see like videos of like queens backstage, there's always like my products like on the counter. So I think that's so cool. You know, I feel like that is like the ultimate like compliment when a drag queen uses your product.
Absolutely. Because you know it needs to be able to deliver and perform.
Exactly.
Do you have a favorite part of getting ready? Like your routine, like whether it's like for, you know, your wig or your makeup, your eyelashes, like what's your favorite part of that ritual?
I always like to put on a podcast when I get ready.
Mm-hmm.
So then it feels like someone is like speaking to me. You know, as I get ready, so I can just like get in the zone and listen to people talk.
What's your favorite show right now?
There's so many, but one of my favorite podcasts is Table Manners with Jessie Ware. Jessie Ware, she's this amazing singer from UK, and her and her mom had a podcast
with her mom,
different guests. Yeah, and then they like they cook for them, and then they talk about whatever.
Love that. What's a trend in beauty that you wish would disappear forever?
I don't even know if I should even say it now. You know, people idolizing and worshiping like specific creators, you know, like they are not God. And, you know, especially like, I don't know, a lot of them were like allegations to like them doing awful things, but people still like worship them. Like,
they, right.
You know, I think that's a little weird.
The cult of fandom, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite city that you like to perform in other than the one that you live in?
Oh, San Francisco.
Okay. Why do you love it so much? Why is it your favorite?
I have so many, like, there's like a huge Gaijin community out there. And every time I go to like shows and things like that, it's all like Gaijins in the audience, which like I never had that growing up, you know, just like a gaggle of Gaijins, just like all hanging out together in one place. And I think that's so cool.
I love that. Last question here. What's one thing that people that you wish everyone knew about drag and then about your work?
What's one thing everyone should know about drag? You know, I think you should go to your local drag shows and find out for yourself why it's so amazing. You know, I don't want to tell you. I think you should be able to discover it on your own. And that's what makes drag beautiful, because there's something for everyone at every drag show.
I agree. Thank you so much again. I really appreciate it. I hope to see you in Toronto at some point again, or at some point soon. Yes. Would love to. Have you had a chance to explore Toronto's food scene, by the way? It is.
Oh my God, it's amazing. Also,
so good.
So many great Indian restaurants.
Yeah, we have a little India. I have to say, like, I've lived here for about 13 years, and I think that we are like Torontonians are spoiled because we're so used to having access to such a wide spectrum of cuisines, also at a wide spectrum of price points. And like, you know, when you go to another city in a different country, there's a lot of times it's like a mono food culture. And so when we come back and we realize that our dominant food culture is actually the multicultural food culture, it's really just incredible. Like, you have access to quality food at any price point, any cuisine. It is so on true. Point.
Oh, so jealous.
I hope that you are able to come back, and maybe we can go get some Korean food sometime.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. Yeah.
I'll show you my favorite ones.
Yes, please. Yeah, show me the way.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.